This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 17th at 10:31 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like the U.S. Supreme Court will issue a clear ruling that leaves no doubt. The Founding Fathers would like the court to facilitate such a ruling. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who use any ambiguity to ignore court orders on immigration. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, ball security, or should we say trophy security, leads to our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, there are stadiums in America that are really old. Fenway Park and Wrigley Field are more than 100 years old, as is our Ohio Stadium. Michigan Stadium is nearly 98 years old. But these days, pro stadiums and arenas have a lifespan of about 25 years. Then the owners want new ones or really expensive upgrades with even fancier scoreboards, luxury suites, entertainment options. And of course, such stadiums are expensive. The current price? $2 billion for a stadium. Arenas are a relative bargain. They only cost about $1 billion on average. And even though the owners of these teams are often billionaires themselves, they want taxpayers to help pay for the playgrounds for pro teams. Of course, here in Ohio, the Browns are looking to move their 3-14 record to a new domed stadium in suburban Cleveland. And state lawmakers seem eager to help. The governor wants to tax sports betting companies and use the money to help the Browns and other teams build stadiums. The Ohio House nixed that plan for now, and they want the state to borrow $600 million just to help the Browns. The question, of course, is it worth it? And to help us answer that question, we welcome economics professor J.C. Bradbury of Kennesaw State University in Georgia. He has looked at stadium financing projects all around the country. J.C., welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, I tried to find a list in preparing for this podcast of pro sports stadiums and arenas that are under construction or under consideration, shall we say. These are the ones that are under construction, the Buffalo Bills Stadium, Calgary Flames Arena. Can we count Canadians on this list? Maybe. If they're going to be the 51st state, we should include them. Anyway, Tennessee Titans in Nashville, they're building a new stadium. These are the ones under consideration, and the plans are in varying states. The formerly Oakland, currently Sacramento, soon to be Las Vegas Athletics, want to build a ballpark. The Chicago Bears, the Washington Commanders, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Kansas City Royals, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Oklahoma City Thunder. We don't want to leave out soccer. Stadiums in the works in New York and in Miami. And here in Ohio, we have the Cleveland Browns, of course. And that leaves out the teams looking for upgrades, the Cincinnati Bengals and the Columbus Blue Jackets. My question to you, Professor Bradbury, is how many of these have been built or will be built without taxpayer money?
So if you go in and look at sort of the past a current stock of major league stadiums, talking about the big four major leagues, you will find, you know, a half a dozen, actually more than that, probably a dozen to 20 stadiums that actually are largely privately financed. And you're talking about, there's I think 111 stadiums in all leagues. I may have that wrong, but so it's something that can be done. Teams really like to have taxpayers chip in and help them out, even though it's not really necessary. But absolutely, it can be done without the public dime.
So let's look at the ones that don't rely a lot on taxpayer money. Are they in the bigger cities? Because I'm thinking like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Boston. Those teams aren't going to move. So their threats of moving aren't really valid, right? So the taxpayers and the government officials might say, no, you're on your own.
Well, some people think it has to do with small markets, but it doesn't have anything to do with market size. Okay. I mean, for example, you take the Carolina Panther Stadium, when it was originally built by Jerry Richardson back in the 1990s, it was largely 100% privately financed. It was some public land that was gifted to the team. But other than that, that was privately financed, which is kind of odd when the new billionaire bought it and demanded $600 plus million for refinancing that the city happily handed over to him. But you see it in large markets and in small markets, teams that are largely privately financed. And largely what differentiates stadiums that are publicly and privately financed is how hard voters fight back. So, mm-hmm. for example, in San Francisco, the Giants stadium right there on the China Basin, I can't remember. They changed ballpark names so much.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah. AT&T Park, Pac Bell Park. I can't remember what it is these days. But that one was largely privately financed when basically the voters refused to build them a new stadium. The owners realized they had a good market and finally ended up ponying up most of the dollars to fund it.
Yeah. Speaking of names, I was watching the Chicago White Sox this past weekend. It used to be Guaranteed Rate Field. Now it's just Rate Field. Apparently they can't guarantee the rates anymore. Anyway, but... we digress. So why do, other than the willingness of public officials to give money for these projects, what is the justification that pro sports teams owners, the legitimate justification they make for taxpayer help?
I'm not sure there's much legitimate justification, but the one that's most often made is economic. And that is, oh, we're going to bring lots of new people to the area. They're going to spend lots of money, and it's going to fill our coffers with new tax revenues to help us pave roads and build new schools. And it's going to have a huge influence on attracting new business. And economists have been studying that for 50 years, and that's a bunch of hooey. There's absolutely no evidence for this whatsoever. And we understand why this doesn't happen. And that's because most of the spending at local sports stadiums is done by people who live locally. And if they weren't spending at the stadium, they'd be spending it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So really, there's absolutely no justification for public funding of sports facilities. And I mean that seriously. I mean, none, zero, zilch. There's no evidence that it's a good idea. The only reason they ever do it is that politicians really like the perks that go along with supporting stadiums.
Now, that's the justification for the latest Browns domed stadium plan. They want to build a dome stadium just outside of Cleveland, up by the Cleveland airport. It would cost, I think, $2 billion. They want the state to borrow, sell bonds, $600 million, which after the interest rates and the interest payments on those bonds are settled, it would cost the state about $1 billion. But the owners of the Browns say they'll generate $1.2, $1.3 billion in tax revenues, which will pay back that interest in full. What are the – if we were on DraftKings, what would be the odds on that coming true?
I mean, we'll all be drinking that sweet bubble up and eating that rainbow stew when that happens. I mean, that's just fanciful nonsense. It's a Trojan horse justification put forth by people who absolutely should know better. It is absolutely unconscionable that politicians push this hooey on us as some sort of legitimate justification to line the pockets of a billionaire. And I mean, legitimately, you should be embarrassed if you think this is true. Economists have been studying this for 50 years. I consistently ask, can someone provide me an example of one stadium, just one stadium that paid for itself? And everyone goes and looks in some other direction because they know they can't. It doesn't exist. It's a mirage. It's a myth. And so that's the reality of it. I hope I have made that clear.
We, you know, here in Columbus, the center of the state, we have a hockey arena that was built around, the year 2099, I think it was when it opened. And they built a neighborhood around it. It was the site of the old Ohio State Penitentiary, which was closed, and it was just this sort of vacant spot in downtown Columbus. They built the arena, and then we have the arena district, which has some mixed use. It's got housing, it's got offices, it's got restaurants, not too much retail, but it's a pretty vibrant area. The folks here argue that the arena led to that. What about that happening in cities? Is that a valid argument for some government help of these arenas?
Right. Well, there is also this myth that these stadiums cause this surrounding development. I use the word cause intentionally here. And we do observe there's sometimes development around stadiums. And that often occurs because the areas where stadiums are often placed are good places to develop to begin with. when economists have gone and looked at different areas where stadiums have been added and how development changed afterwards, if anything, development gets worse. Stadiums actually hinder development around the area, and sometimes you do see development happen afterwards, but that's because that area had good transportation access. It was close to downtown and other businesses or other areas that people wanted to be at, but stadiums themselves come with all sorts of costs. So if you're hosting a game, you have a lot of people coming into town, a lot of traffic. If you want to open up a grocery store, near a stadium is the last thing you want to do that. And so what I often tell people if they want to see how development affects stadiums is go look at an area where a stadium left. Perfect example is right where I live in Atlanta, Georgia, where the Atlanta Braves used to play at Turner Field. For 50 years, there were two stadiums that was there, Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, then Turner Field. Destroyed the neighborhood around it. Now it's one of the coolest, hippest areas in Atlanta 10 years after the team has left. And that's because you don't have to worry about the disruption of people coming down there and leaving trash or disrupting businesses. Now they're grocery stores, people living down there. It's an exciting place to be. So the relationship between a stadium and development, there doesn't seem to be much of one that anyone should be counting on any surrounding development to happen because of it.
Now, Atlanta is a really classic example. Atlanta goes through stadiums like the rest of us go through Hondas. Every 10 years, you all get a new stadium, it seems. You know, the Braves have been, you know, they're out in suburban Atlanta now. The Falcons have gone from Fulton County Stadium to the Georgia Dome, and now it's, the Mercedes-Benz Dome. I mean, you guys build a lot of stadiums, and they don't last very long.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that it's right down the road from Georgia Tech's Bobby Dodd Stadium, which has existed for over 100 years. So, I mean, clearly, it doesn't have anything to do with capital depreciation. The reason why teams go through stadiums so fast is that owners want to get new revenue that new stadiums bring, because you can add luxury amenities that your clientele want, but also fans really like going to new stadiums, and so they benefit from a huge influx of revenue called the novelty effect, which lasts for about 5 to 10 years. And so after that's worn off, owners are always looking for any excuse they can to build a new stadium. And again, they're not making it so the common man can go in and visit the stadium. We think of most public projects as something that everyone can access, but most of these stadiums have luxury plazas and levels that very few people can access and cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars just for memberships to get in the door to eat fine food. So that's really what's going on here. It's the opulence that owners are after, and they want to make money off.
I was looking at the list of the Wikipedia page of stadiums around the world that are under construction or planned. And there's a lot of stadiums all around the world. Do other countries subsidize their pro soccer stadia like we do?
So there is some subsidization around the world, but not nearly as much as happens in the U.S. I mean, in the U.S., politicians often talk about this as if it's like garbage collection. You know, oh, we have to do this. This is something that the city's responsible for. But when I talk to my European colleagues, economists who study these things, they often find it fascinating that the U.S. does this. And there are a few public stadiums, but most professional football or soccer teams abroad build their own stadiums. And it's expected that's expected part of cost of operation. And so the U.S. is somewhat unique in doing that. And it's not to say there aren't any government built facilities for sports, particularly for international events like the Olympics.
Yeah.
But it's much less common for professional sports teams than it is in the U.S.
What about the argument that, you know, Cleveland would lose something if the Browns were to leave or the Bengals were to leave Cincinnati? There's sort of a social pride, civic pride argument to be made for helping keep that culture.
Right. So one, you have to look at where are they going to go. As far as I know, there are no markets that are out there searching for a NFL team. And those that tend to be smaller markets that are worse. The NFL needs Cleveland and Cincinnati more than Cleveland and Cincinnati need the NFL. I mean, talk about civic pride. Have some pride in your city. I mean, take a look at a city like Montreal that lost the Expos. Montreal is a fantastic, wonderful city, and not having the Expos doesn't make it any less of a city. When LA lost its two NFL franchises for 20 years, do people say, oh, LA is now minor league? No, the NFL realized what a huge mistake it was and got a team back there in a privately funded stadium. So major league towns aren't made major league by the teams, that major league teams want to be in major league cities. And so that's what I think people need to remember. And if a team leaves, you know, so what? Go pound sand, and the team will be back. A team will be back probably before you know it, and you can find many other things to do with your time, and there are plenty of other options on television. Yeah. But you'll have more money in your pocket if you don't give in to the stadium grift.
You know, Mike DeWine, our governor, had sort of a pragmatic approach to this. He said, look, these owners, sports owners, are going to keep coming to us and asking for money to build and upgrade their stadiums or arenas. So let's tax. Sports betting is relatively new here to Ohio. It's been very successful for the sports betting companies. Let's double the tax on the sports betting companies and use that money to pay for stadium construction and stadium upgrades and arenas construction and arena upgrades. What do you think of that plan?
I mean, what a weak coward. I mean, if someone's coming to you and repeatedly taking money for you to say, well, we got to figure out a way to give them money quicker. So it's a mob shakedown. Stand up and be a man. This is absolutely ridiculous. And what spineless people do we elect that won't stand up to these wealthy owners? And the reason they stand up is that they're in on the grift. They're the ones that get to spend time in the owner's box. They're the ones that get gifted free jerseys. They're part of the upper crust that get to go to these stadium events. What voters need to do is start electing better people rather than these pathetic losers.
Now, in Kansas City, is an interesting story there. The Chiefs, as we all know, are terrific. Super Bowl champions, tremendously fanatical fan base. They play it's an older stadium, but it's a nice place, and it's a tough place for opponents to play. They want a new stadium. Royals want a new stadium. They went to the voters, and it wasn't even close. They shot it down.
Right, absolutely. And that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that publicly subsidized stadiums are very unpopular. If you look at national surveys, they overwhelmingly oppose stadiums. And in fact, politicians who vote for stadiums are often voted out of office. I mean, the most infamous example of this was George Patak, a Wisconsin state senator who was recalled from office when he voted for the Brewers stadium. Voters were so angry at him. Right here where I live in Cobb County, just outside Atlanta, the person who organized the Brave Stadium deal, Tim Lee, was defeated in a landslide by an anti-stadium candidate. So I think that elected representatives should think twice if they think this is going to further their political career, because oftentimes they find themselves being voted out of office because it's a very open issue that everyone can see. And if they see you're giving in to these owners, they'll vote you out of office. And let me tell you what, the owner who has given you access to the owner's box when you were in office is suddenly going to disappear when you no longer have your political power.
So do you see the trend changing, or do you see it continuing, the public support for these stadiums, because of that political pressure?
So I actually do see somewhat of a change, not in terms of politicians supporting them, but in terms of voters fighting back. So you take a look at what happened out in Nevada, where the Oakland A's are supposedly moving. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but basically a lot of voters have stood up and said, we don't want that stadium. And they've been fighting back against it. And you've seen it time and again in Nashville, where they pushed for a new Titan stadium. And basically the mayor was forced not to run for office as they elected an anti-stadium candidate. And so I think politicians are slowly becoming aware that voters aren't quite so fond of this, and if they want to keep their cushy, elected office jobs, they need to not be so acquiescent to what owners are asking for.
We shall see how this plays out. J.C. Bradbury, economics professor at Kennesaw State University and a fierce critic of public funding for pro stadiums. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thanks, Mike. Enjoy talking with you.
We'll be right back.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week, it goes to OSU running back Travion Henderson. I'm sure you've all seen it. You saw Vice President J.D. Vance nearly fumble the OSU Buckeyes National Championship Trophy at the White House when the Buckeyes were being honored by President Trump. The trophy separated from its base and Vance fumbled it a bit, but the sure-handed Travion Henderson caught the trophy before it fell. I looked it up. 144 carries last year. Travion Henderson had 144 carries last season. He did not fumble the ball once. The guy's got good hands. We should note, however, the wooden stand very nearly landed on Henderson's foot, and that could have been bad. So, for shrewdly saving J.D. Vance from even more embarrassment, running back Travion Henderson gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.